Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National Mortgage Lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Going to get to your calls in just a second and make my NFL picks in just a second. In fact, let me flip that. I'll get to my NFL picks in just a second and get to some of your calls now on CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's go to CJ in Fort Worth, Texas. CJ, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Morning, Robin.
What's up, CJ?
So, not much. So, I heard your take on Jordan. I actually saw that interview. And one of the things that, reason why he brought up Eli is because the reporter was talking about Super Bowl.
Yeah.
When he was saying, hey, you know, where Big Ben lies at. So, and then when he added context to it by saying, hey, he meant first ballot Hall of Fame.
When
it comes to quarterback, it does make a difference.
You know, and I don't – those comments, by the way, don't light me on fire. I would say this. Here I think is fair. Ben Roethlisberger is a lot closer to Eli Manning than he is Tom Brady.
I mean, you could say that. I would look at their – I mean, I guess a little biased. I'm an Eagles fan. I do look at Eli's Super Bowls a little bit different. He got drugged to those Super Bowls. He threw a fluky pass, in my opinion.
That's not true, though. Then, CJ, I mean, that's not true. Look, I know, like, they had good defenses and all that.
No, but, great defense.
Sure, but that's not true.
Right,
I mean, if you look at his
defense.
If you look at his playoff run, and I'm going to pull it up right now, in 2000,
He only had two playoff runs, and those are the only two times they went to the playoffs.
Sure, but in 2011, Eli Manning in the playoffs completed 65% of his passes. He had 9 touchdowns and 1 interception for 1,219 yards during that stretch, completing 7.5 yards per attempt. 9 touchdowns,
Brady,
1 interception. I'm not saying he's Tom Brady.
Just against us, threw 500 yards, and he lost in the Super Bowl. So it's not the big of a deal. Nick Foles just went berserk. In the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
But Eli did it twice.
Hey, the sun shines on a dog.
Twice.
Every now and then.
Twice. Two separate playoff runs where he won 4 games.
Hey, you know what? Okay, I'll change it. A broke clock is right twice a day.
I just feel like it's not fair to discredit that. Like, you can't – if you take away everyone's greatest achievement, everyone looks worse.
Well, okay, let me say this part. The rest of his career, he didn't make the playoffs or he wasn't relevant. Come on,
Well, that's not the only time he made the playoffs.
How many more times did he make the playoffs aside the Super Bowl years?
4.
Okay. Did he do anything?
No.
Did he win anything?
No. But he won 2 Super Bowl MVPs. I mean, how many players in the history of the sport have won 2 Super Bowl MVPs?
52.
You know, I mean, Eli's also. You know, when we talk about Hall of Famers, Eli's also a Hall of Famer.
Hold on. How many of those Super Bowl MVPs actually were just? Because, Larry Brown from the Cowboys, he got one.
But did he get two? I said two. How many players have two Super Bowl MVPs?
He got a Super Bowl MVP.
Two.
52. I mean, if you got 52 Super Bowls, you got 52 Super Bowl MVPs, right?
No, only one player gets a Super Bowl MVP.
I'm talking about total. You got 52. If you got 52 Super Bowls, you got 52
MVPs. Yeah, how many players have two Super Bowl MVPs?
Oh, my goodness, man. Yeah, he had 2 really good years. And the rest of his career, he's been... Yeah.
He's top 10 all time in passing yards and passing touchdowns.
Come on. We know those excuses because everybody throws the ball all over the place.
I mean, credit, you have to discredit everyone. I'm not saying Eli Manning's legendary belongs in that class. I'm just saying Eli Manning's not like some bum.
I'm just saying, Eli Manning gets shooed in to the Hall of Fame for several reasons. One, we're going to give him his credit. He won 2 Super Bowls and he was 2 Super Bowl MVPs. 2, his family name. He had a brother that's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Forget his name. Totally remove his name. If I told you someone was... If I told you someone was top 10 all-time in passing yards, top 10 all-time in passing touchdowns, and also was a two-time Super Bowl MVP, you're not telling me that person's a Hall of Famer? I mean, I think that's a pretty reasonable Hall of Fame case. How about Tab in Harrisburg? Tab, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, how you doing, man?
What's up, dude?
Yeah, I'm another Eagles fan about to just... I'm not going to go off on you because I don't really care for Eli, but my question to you is that I've seen a recent trend in the NFL as players, the week that they're about to play the team, they call them out. Like, even with Grugier Hill, he said he had called out the Dallas Cowboys, and now you have Cam Jordan calling out the who was it? Who are they playing this week?
The Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger.
Steelers, and early on in the season as well. Like, have you noticed that, or is it just that we?
I just mentioned it a minute ago. I mean, I think part of that could be they're being asked about those guys, right? So,
right.
Like, so many of these things we have to take account. These people are answering questions. It's like I brought up with LeBron at the top of the show when we were talking about Anthony Davis and all that. He was asked a question, he answered it. In this case, Cam Jordan is asked questions and he answered it. But yeah, I think there might be some gamesmanship that gets involved in those situations as well. You're trying to, you know, football is not a normal activity. It's not a baseline activity. Like, what you're doing out there is, to a degree, insane. So you have to get yourself to a place to do it right, some guys do. David in Abilene, Texas. David, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Thanks, Robin, for taking my phone call. All three guys, you know, Rivers, Eli, and Big Ben are going to go in the Hall of Fame. But support Big Ben, Robin. I always go by postseason wins, and I do believe Big Ben currently has 13 postseason wins, and that's pretty hard to argue with that, sir.
Look, I'm not arguing against Ben Roethlisberger as a Hall of Famer. I wouldn't do it because it's not it's an incorrect argument, and I try not to do that. I would say I don't think it's egregious to have him off the top five of the generation, but it would be egregious to have him outside of the Hall of Fame. As well. All right, time to make my NFL picks. All right, Anthony, what are the standings again?
You went 5-1 last week, and overall on the year, you're 40-32-1.
All right, so I'm a genius. I have a theme this week. I have a theme. I will pick one game that doesn't go with the theme. I'll start with that. Just because this number seems too big, maybe I'm being naive. Cincy plus 9.5 over Cleveland. I'm not ready to take the Browns as 9.5-point favorites yet. I'm perfectly willing to say that the Browns are probably going to win that game. I'm perfectly willing to say that the Browns have turned their season around. And even, like, it's pretty remarkable, they're still mathematically alive for the playoffs. But I'm not willing to pick the Browns as 9.5-point favorites in division as of yet. So give me Cincy plus 9.5 over Cleveland. The other ones all are a similar theme, and I brought this up earlier in the show, so I'm marrying myself to this point, and I just expressed it a second ago. I think it's often discounted just how intense football is, just what you have to do to win a football game against other, you know, supreme athletes competing at the highest level, the level of motivation, the level of, you know, you hear about Super Bowl hangovers all the time. Why? Because it's not like other sports where every sport can have a championship hangover. Every sport you can have a degree of malaise, but the other sports are not football. You know, I referenced this earlier in a conversation where people are saying people play a game. Football's not, I mean, it's a game technically, but it's not like a game like basketball or soccer or baseball are games where you can just go out and play those. You can't just go out and play football. Your livelihood is in danger every time you're out there. Your life is, in a sense, could be impacted every time you're out there. So there's a degree of motivation that I think has to be organic, that's hard to replicate if it's not. So I'm going to go with the teams that are playing for everything this week. Baltimore plus 4.5 over the Chargers. Ravens still have a chance at that division. Still have a chance at the playoffs, but they need to win for those things to come to fruition. The Chargers just had a big win over Kansas City. Yes, of course, I know they're, you know, you want to win home field and all that, but it's hard to replicate that when you know you're in. They're in. Philly, -1.5 over Houston, same reason. Houston's rolling. What have they won? How many? They won 10 of 11? I think 10 of 11 games. Going on the road to Philadelphia against a team who, quite frankly, I think is probably better at this moment with Nick Foles at quarterback. Whatever that means in the big picture, I don't know yet. But Wentz banged up. Wentz, to me, was really forcing the ball to Zach Ertz a lot, and Foles spreads it around a little bit more. I think the Eagles are in a better spot there right now, and they obviously need that game. So give me Philly minus 1.5 over Houston. Pittsburgh plus 6.5 over New Orleans. The Saints have shown a propensity for being able to win various games styles now, which bodes well for their future. But, you know, the whole Pittsburgh hysteria reached a peak the last several weeks. But if you had asked people who one of the best teams in football was 3 or 4 weeks ago, they would have said the Steelers. And I don't think they're that far from that team. Again, playing for everything. And with 6.5 points, I would take the Steelers plus 6.5 against nearly anybody, anywhere. And finally, Seattle plus 2.5 over Kansas City. Kansas City doesn't seem to be firing on all cylinders at the moment. And same thing goes for the Seahawks. Still playing to get in, playing at home. And if I'm going to big up Russell Wilson all show, I might as well put my imaginary money where my mouth is here. So those are my NFL picks for this here weekend. 855-212-4227 at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. That's RobinLundberg. Going to get into the situation around the Patriots, both with Josh Gordon and Tom Brady, and where he's at in his career with Michael Giardi, NFL Network reporter. He is covering the Patriots and the Bills. What are the Bills, 13.5-point dogs? Is that too many? I didn't pick them, though. I can't really pick the Bills in New England and feel good about it. But we'll talk about that coming up next. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. And right now on the line, Michael Giardi, NFL Network reporter. Michael, I know you're covering the Patriots and the Bills this week. I think there's more to talk about with the Patriots. So to any Bills fans out there, I apologize in advance. But we'll probably spend a lot of time on the Patriots. First of all, I have to get your reaction to what the team's reaction was to the Josh Gordon situation. I know the statement they put out there, but what have you been hearing from the players and the coaches you've talked to?
Yeah, I mean, general surprise. You know, I don't think anybody really kind of saw it coming, and that's not, I think, necessarily uncommon for someone like Josh, who has managed to fit in at various times and then, you know, things go sideways on him. So I think they're sad for the guy, you know, and they're wishing him the best. You know, Bill Belichick said he spoke to him Thursday morning when the news came out, and, you know, again, same thing, wishing him the best. Hopefully he can beat this. But then it was like, I'm not talking about it anymore. You know, we said what we have to say. We got a big game here against Buffalo, and we can't afford to be distracted, because there's a lot left for this team to play for.
And I spoke about Josh Gordon earlier in the show, gave my full thoughts on the situation, but I'm just curious, just to reiterate, obviously they wanted to move on from the topic. That seems to be how the Patriots handle things simply in general. But they had, via his attendance and work ethic and all that, they had no inkling that this was coming?
No, I mean, there. You know, there was a period before the Bills game earlier in the year where he was late for a meeting and may have been late for the team bus. But other than that, there really hasn't been anything that jumped out to them. You know, he's been there for the morning meeting, which is not it's not mandatory. There's a 7:45 meeting to kind of call it a get energized meeting. But it's not, you don't have to be there until positional meetings, and he's been there for that. So that's sort of when the players kind of realized something might be amiss, when they were in that meeting and they're like, oh, everybody's here but Josh. Mm-hmm. You know, so they had 15 minutes to sort of wonder, and then Bill came in front of them and told them that Josh would not be there and wouldn't be around for the rest of the year.
Understood. Just interesting to get that point of view and perspective on it from, you know, what was actually happening internally there. Now, to some of the I guess, bigger picture issues for the Patriots, especially for guys that have been around there for a while, there are two stars on that team that I think you're hearing discussions about to a certain degree. Let's start with the bigger name, and that being Tom Brady. There isn't a bigger name than Brady. Where do you fall on this growing again, like it seems to be on and off again narrative that he might be taking a step back? From what you've seen, how do you assess where Tom Brady is right now?
He certainly hasn't been as good as he was last year when he was the MVP of the league. I think there have been periods where his play has been high level, and I think there have been periods where he has fallen short of that, and that's certainly recently. You know, they're up in Miami in the first half. He's lighting them up. It looks maybe as good as he has all year. So it was a touchdown pass to Rob Gronkowski. And then from that moment on, the next six quarters and change, the Patriots have scored one touchdown. And Brady has been complicit in that. He has not performed at a high level. He's missed open receivers. He's bailed in the pocket at times. You know, he's felt pressure. I don't think he's been surrounded by the best skill position talent, but in years past, he's been able to elevate that skill position talent, and that hasn't happened on a consistent basis this year.
I think you nailed my kind of read on it right there at the end. Robin Lundberg talking to Michael Giardi, NFL Network reporter here on CBS Sports Radio. If I were to just try and sum it up in one sentence, it seems to me like it's not like he's fallen off the face of the planet, right? He can still play, but he's taken a bit of a decline, as is to be expected, but we're actually seeing it in real time now at the same time as the rest of the roster has as well, which makes it stand out, makes maybe a smaller decline stand out a little bit more.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I mean, I'm sure you're going to get into Gronk here, but they're just – Gronk and Edelman have been his two guys. You know, I know Danny Amendola for a couple of years as well, but he's, of course, in Miami now. And neither one of those guys are having the kind of year that you're used to. And that, there's a trickle-down effect across the board. I mean, Gordon ended up being their best wide receiver over the last 6 weeks or so, best receiver period. And I don't think that was ever the plan. You know, I think when they sat together back in the offices in February and they mapped out how this season was going to look and what they needed to do, I don't think that they foresaw the kind of drop off that you've had at other places that they're seeing now.
Yeah, and to Gronk, it makes me believe, Michael, is the trade rumors about him, because New England has been so good in the past at sort of, you know, it's part of almost the heartless business of the NFL at times, but so good at identifying like when a guy was at his end and then trading him. So I do wonder if there was more to the Gronk trade rumors now that we're seeing Gronk play, because it's starting to look like, you know, I would say for most of us, he's probably the single biggest weapon at that position we've ever seen, and he certainly looks like physically somebody who's been through the grind at this point.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's been dealing with the back and the ankle since week two in Jacksonville, and I don't think that there's any coincidence that after week one, when he lit up the Texans and made a couple catches that were vintage Gronk, that we haven't really seen vintage Gronk since then. He had a big game 2 weeks ago in Miami, but Miami played soft zone. I mean, he didn't do anything spectacular in that game. There were open throws to be made, and he took advantage of them. I go back to the off season with him. You know, to me, sort of, I'm not sure I necessarily buy that they thought he was falling off. I mean, he was dominant late last year. He was dominant in the Super Bowl. I think to me that the trade stuff was generated by the fact that he wasn't really returning their phone calls in the offseason, that they weren't sure that he was on the plan. I mean, he said obviously after the Super Bowl he was thinking about retirement. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that played into it as well. But then when they finally had the come to Jesus meeting with him, if you will, with Belichick right before the draft, and was like, are you in or you out? You know, are you going to respond? Are you going to train with us? Are you going to do all these things? And he said, oh, yeah, you know, I'm in. I only want to play with Tom and blah, 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 blah. Now, whether he was full-on committed to that or not, I don't know. I mean, it certainly looks like he's lacked some explosiveness all year, and maybe that's part of the way he trained. He's in good shape, but maybe he wasn't in great football shape. Only Rob can really answer that question, but it's certainly been a different year for him, and it makes you wonder if it's the last year for him. Certainly the last year for him in New England at the cap number he's going to be at next year. If he wants to come back, there's no way in hell they're paying him $10-plus million to be the player that he is right now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One on the Buffalo side really quickly. Josh Allen is interesting to me because he had all the measurables that people are looking for, I guess, from a height standpoint and all that. But he also plays a way that other guys are criticized for, and that's more of an athlete playing quarterback. And he seems like a heck of an athlete, and I actually think there's a lot of potential there as a result of that. Of course, the accuracy and the simple play is a bit of a question. What have you seen from him in his rookie year, and where do you think his ceiling is?
Yeah, he sort of surprised me a little bit. I mean, not from the sense that he's still got a lot of room to grow as a passer. I think he's coming off his best week as a quarterback in the league in terms of throwing the football, and he was 13 of 26. Now, in a league where guys are completing 70% of their passes with their eyes closed, he's clearly got a long way to go. He's been most dangerous this year, as you mentioned, in a way that gets other people criticized, in the sense that it's getting out of the pocket. It's making something out of nothing, broken plays, obviously tucking and running. I mean, they had three quarters of their total offense against the Jets, and he ran for 135 yards or something. I mean, he's stiff-arming guys. He's hurdling guys. I mean, that's not normal quarterback play, not at the NFL level. So is it sustainable? I don't know, but he's given them energy. I talked to Kyle Williams, their terrific defensive tackle, who's in year 13 or 14, I believe, and he was like, he hasn't just energized me. He said he's energized the whole team, and he's sort of energized that city. I mean, they're 4-5 with him as the starting quarterback. And when you consider the pieces that they have on the offense, especially at the skill position level, I mean, we're talking about the Patriots not having their normal level of talent, the skill position level. I mean, did anybody know who Robert Foster was until about 5 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not a lot there, and yet they're competitive, and he's a big reason why, I think.
Good assessment, Michael. Appreciate your time this morning, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
You heard the man do all the stuff he just said and catch any of the show that you missed. We talked about the absurdity of LeBron James's tampering when he was asked a question, and he just answered it. What LeBron had to say about the NFL, which I'm sure is going to blow up as the weekend goes on. Josh Gordon's unfortunate situation with the Patriots and the NFL. Aaron Rodgers somehow getting into the Pro Bowl over Russell Wilson. Where Ben Roethlisberger ranks in the pantheon of quarterbacks. And how in the world that person that CNBC put the budget up for actually maintains that budget. But now it is time to get to everything I have not in another one. All right, Anthony, what is up first?
Well, let's start where we left off with Mike Giardi with the Josh Gordon situation with the Patriots. So with Gordon now gone from the team, do you believe the Patriots are still true contenders or not?
Yes. I've seen the Patriots there too many times. I do not think this is the best incarnation of that team, but I'm not ready to dismiss them fully either at this point. I think... In the sports world, and maybe in life in general, sometimes we have problems with things that don't fall on extremes, right? So, like, Josh Gordon did not change the dynamics of the Patriots like Randy Moss once did, right? He also wasn't a non-factor. He contributed. He gave them a deep threat. He gave them another, you know, weapon out at the wide receiver position. But they've done more with less in the past as well. So I think it's somewhere in the middle, and in New England certainly does not look great at this point in time. Obviously, we've discussed Tom Brady and where he's at, where Gronkowski's at, their overall lack of dominance. But the Patriots are contenders every single year, every single postseason until further notice. And the same goes for this year, because if you're going to knock down the Patriots, like, who is good, right? Like, honestly, which team is good in the NFL right now? Like, really elite level good. All the ones that were playing that way are not playing that way anymore. So I'm not going to single out the Patriots because we're used to them excelling when we're seeing the Rams and the Chiefs and the Saints and the Patriots and all these teams look very, very, you know, standard good at the moment. And I mentioned this on last week's show. I think there might be 10 teams that it wouldn't stun me if they made the Super Bowl. There might be 10 teams.
So the Cowboys, they suffered an ugly loss last week to the Colts. You had Josh Johnson, he was clutch on the center for the Redskins, the defending champion Eagles. They upset the Rams, so you have the Eagles and Redskins just a game back in the East. Who will win the NL? Who will win the
NL?
NFC East?
The NL, the New York Mets. the NFC East. That is a good one. I really do think the Eagles are going to be better with Foles at the helm. That's not me, like, again, what I just said about extremes. That's not me saying that they should move on from Carson Wentz or Carson Wentz is bad necessarily. It just feels like at this moment, I think they were used to the way they ran the plays with him in the playoffs a year ago. They were spreading the ball out more with him. I do think Wentz went to Ertz by default too often, but I overall lean that the Cowboys, I just, you know, they don't have the injuries on defense the way the Eagles do. I think Dallas is one of the stronger defenses in the league, and Amari Cooper did just enough for their offense to make them respectable that I still think Dallas is the better overall team, so I will pick the Cowboys there.
Staying in the NFC East, we learned that Carson Wentz had a separate back issue in college. Should the Eagles be worried about Wentz's long-term health?
Absolutely. How could you not be? How could you not be? He had the ACL injury. Obviously, he had what you're seeing now with his style of play is another aspect. You know, I just talked about Josh Allen and how he plays the way that other guys get criticized for, and Carson Wentz, to a lesser degree, does. You know, Andrew Luck, to a lesser degree, does. Aaron Rodgers, to a lesser degree, does. You know, those guys don't necessarily get stereotyped or cast that way. But I think that's got to be something that the Eagles look toward, too. So you have to be concerned just from the actual injuries he has had. And you have to be concerned that he will be able to keep himself healthy when, in fact, he does get better from those injuries because he has played a style that has lent himself to being injured.
So the Panthers shutting down Cam Newton. Aaron Rodgers, however, will play Sunday against the Jets. Should other teams follow suit, Robin, with what the Panthers are doing and shutting down their star quarterback now that their season is over? Do you have a problem with Aaron Rodgers playing against the Jets tomorrow in these final 2 weeks?
I'm not going to say I have a problem with it, but I would say if I were in charge, of course. Of course these guys should. I feel like this is a theme of today's show, maybe because of, you know, the heaviness of the topic around Josh Gordon and you know, dealing with how I made my NFL picks this week. But again, this is not a normal game. Not a normal game. Every time you step on the field, your career is in jeopardy. Every single time. So if you're the Panthers and your success and failure is dependent on Cam Newton, of course, the second you're out of it, you should try and preserve Cam Newton and get him right. The same goes for Aaron Rodgers. The same goes for skill position players. I mean, I think, I bet you if the Giants were playing for something right now, Odell Beckham would be playing this week. But he's not, and it's wise. I mean, look, I understand guys probably want to play sometimes. I understand they're getting paid to play and all that. But if you're going to think of these guys as assets, which we know happens already, you know, you like to think about them as both assets for your team and human beings as well. But if you're going to think about them as assets for your football team, you have to manage those assets the best way possible, and you have to get the most out of them. And you are gaining nothing from them by playing them in situations that ultimately do nothing for your team. There is no difference in the outcome of the game as far as that goes. So then, of course, get them extra weeks to get healthy. Get them an extra opportunity to not get hurt worse. All those things. Of course it makes sense.
So we spoke about LeBron's comments earlier regarding Anthony Davis, but LeBron not the only one battling for the future of Anthony. Of course, you have the Boston Celtics in there as well. What's the better fit for Davis? And although the Pelicans have said that they will not, should the Pelicans trade Anthony Davis?
Yes. I've seen this movie before. I believe Anthony Davis is going to get traded. I believe Anthony Davis is probably trying to get traded to L.A., based on his representation beyond everything else. If I'm in charge of New Orleans, I get the best trade package I can for Anthony Davis when I can. I don't care who it's from. I don't worry about things like, oh, we don't want to give him what he wants and lose out here, or, oh, we don't want to trade him within the conference. So to me, it would come down to who offers the best package, and I would not wait until I'm in a situation where my leverage is completely depleted. The tells are there. You know, Davis said earlier this year he feels like he has to play perfect or they lose. He just said recently the Supermax is not going to make that much of a difference in his decision. That's the one advantage New Orleans has in the pursuit of Davis. So if I'm them, I have to start thinking proactively. You know, the further out ahead of it you are, the more leverage you have contractually with Davis. I think the two biggest suitors are going to be Boston and L.A. So the question becomes, who has the better package? You know, is it the draft pick that Boston can maybe get you? A top five draft pick, is that the best overall asset you value along with Jaylen Brown or something like that? Do you value Brandon Ingram in a way that moves you? You know, if it's a package centered around Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, is that more than what you think another team could possibly offer? I mean, that's ultimately what you have to look for, is who's offering you the best possible package, because we see so often guys stay with their team the first 7 years of their career, roughly, whatever it is, through that second contract. After that is when they make the move, and we've seen it over and over again, guys saying, all right, I really don't want to be here anymore. Let's work it out. And the player almost always wins in that situation. So I think the next one looming is clearly Anthony Davis. The writing's on the wall. If you're the Pelicans and you're running them the right way, you have to maximize what you can get in return for him.
So Rick Pitino will coach in Greece, but his goal remains to return to the NBA. What chance do you give Pitino of coaching in the NBA?
I mean, he's not young. You know, this story is kind of funny because he wrote that whole book, right? And then also said he wasn't going to coach again. I interviewed him face-to-face right when that book was coming out, and I could tell he wasn't done with coaching. The way he even answered I'm done with coaching. The way he answered that question was like, everybody really wants me to be done with coaching. Things are bad for me right now, so I'm just going to say I'm done with coaching. But as soon as I get the chance to coach again, I'm going to do it. And that's what you saw. But I think it would take a tremendous amount of success for Rick Pitino to get a head coaching job in the NBA again. Not only do you have everything, the baggage that goes along with him, he's 66 years old at this point. So I think his time coaching a marquee team, both college or NBA, is done. If he still just loves to coach, then fine, more power to him. But he's going to have to do it either at smaller schools or in Europe, like he's doing right now.
Urban Meyer will co-teach a course on character and leadership at Ohio State. Should Meyer be teaching a class on character?
Probably not. I don't know Urban Meyer totally. It's always more complex than simply the way we talk about these things. But I would not say the way he handled the situation at Ohio State was a testament to remarkable character. Let's just put it that way. And when you're teaching a class on character, you can't have something that would besmirch your character, possibly, even if it's, generalizations, that easy a Google away. You know, like, where does that come up with Urban Meyer if you Google Urban Meyer right now? I'm going to see if it's on the first page. Hold on a second. Urban Meyer, to teach leadership class at Ohio State Buckeyes, teach character and leadership class. So they're Urban Meyer leaves another program disgraced. It made it on the first page. What to know now about Ohio State's investigation of Urban Meyer? So if disgraced and investigation are in the first page of your Google search, you probably shouldn't be leading a class on character.
And finally, DC Universe, they have a new movie out. Aquaman released yesterday. I know you're Mr. Marvel, Robin, so I'll ask you, what's your favorite DC movie?
This is easy. It's the second Batman with the Joker.
Batman Returns.
Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure how. All right, yes.
I get the names confused.
It's a Dark Knight.
Batman Begins, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Rises was not very good. I think that movie's overrated. The Bane character was cool, but the rest of the movie. Like, you know what? There's so many things that bother me about that movie. Batman, who's supposed to be Captain Prep Time, the more prep time you give him, the more dangerous he is. He's off in a cave having to learn how to get back and finally gets back to Bane and his style is fisticuffs after all that time away, and then he somehow conveniently finds Catwoman right away. There's just a lot of problems I have with that movie. But the second one is an excellent film, period. From the Heath Ledger performance down to the story, the whole thing. Batman Begins was pretty good too. I don't let my biases, I'd hope not. Like, it's not like I'm not a brand guy. Let me put it that way. I'm not like, I have to draw a line in the sand and here's my allegiance lies. I just like Marvel characters better, and I think Marvel's made better movies as a whole. That's all. Doesn't mean I have to like rail against DC. What are the Romeo and Juliet families? The Capulets and the something or others? It's not that. The Romulos and the Capulets. Does anybody know what the other one is? Come on. Nobody has any literature reference there? Manigulds and the Capulets? Something like that. It's not like that. All right, guys. I'm out next week, so have a happy and healthy holidays. This has been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Andy Gresh is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.